Wishing that you will have a great weekend.
This is VOA News. I'm Michael Brown. U.S. President Joe Biden's administration on Thursday released a summary of after-action reports on the U.S. chaotic withdrawal from Afghanistan that laid blame on his predecessor, Donald Trump, saying there were no signs that more time, more funds, or more Americans could have fundamentally changed the trajectory. We get more on the story from Reuters' Tamara Lindstrom.
The White House on Thursday released a summary of the after-action reports on the chaotic U.S. withdrawal from Afghanistan, laying part of the blame on President Joe Biden's predecessor, Donald Trump.
President Biden inherited a force presence in Afghanistan of some 2,500 troops, and he inherited a deal struck between the previous administration and the Taliban that called for the complete removal of all U.S. troops by May of 2021, or else the Taliban, which had stopped its attacks while the deal was in place, would go back to war against the United States.
Kirby said the Trump administration was not forthcoming when asked for withdrawal plans, affording little in the way of transition between the administrations.
That was Tamara Lindstrom reporting. Israel's Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu late Thursday vowed to retaliate after a barrage of rockets from Lebanon added to already simmering tensions in the country. Netanyahu spoke during a meeting of the Security Cabinet assembled to discuss the worsening security situation. Israel's military has said militants in Lebanon fired a barrage of rockets at Israel, forcing people across Israel's northern frontier area into bomb shelters, wounding at least two people and damaging property. Similar tensions in Jerusalem led to an 11-day war between Israel and Hamas in 2021. This is VOA News. The head of the Sudanese army said on Thursday he remained committed to a plan for a new transition towards elections, despite disputes over the integration of a paramilitary force that have twice delayed the signing of a final deal. The agreement, which provides for information of a civilian government and is strongly supported by the international community, is meant to end the political vacuum that is following the October 2021 overthrow of longtime autocratic ruler Omar al-Bashir. The agreement faces opposition from pro-democracy resistance committees that reject negotiations with the military and have led anti-military protests since the coup, which derailed a previous political transition. China's leader has called for peace talks over Ukraine after France's president urged him to bring Russia to its senses. We get more on the story from the AP's Karen Chalmers.
At a joint news briefing in Beijing, China's Xi Jinping said, resume peace talks as soon as possible in accordance with the purposes and principles of the UN Charter, take into account the legitimate security concerns of all parties. Xi, however, gave France's President Emmanuel Macron no assurances that he would use his close diplomatic relationship with Russia's President Vladimir Putin as leverage to push for peace. Beijing sees Moscow as a strategic partner in the face of U.S. domination in global affairs. Whilst China's government has tried to remain neutral, it has given Putin diplomatic support and has repeated Russian justifications for the February 2022 attack. I'm Karen Chamas.
The Biden administration is proposing stopping schools and colleges across the country from fully banning transgender athletes. AP correspondent Sagar Magani has that story.
It's a political counterpunch as GOP-led states try to ban trans athletes from school sports that align with their gender identities. The rule would stop any school or college getting federal funding from categorically banning trans students from sports teams consistent with their gender identity. But it's nearly certain to face challenges, and the rule would let teams create some limits for things like ensuring fairness in competition or reducing injury risks. The proposal comes as international sports governing bodies move to ban all trans athletes from track and field events and effectively ban trans women from swimming events. Sagar Magani, Washington.
And as always, for details on much more news, we invite you to join us at our website, voanews.com, or the VOA mobile app. I'm Michael Brown, VOA News.
Today is Friday, April 7th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I am Gina Dolfo in Washington. Coming up in the next half hour, a U.S. White House report blames former President Trump for Afghan withdrawal chaos.
Decisions by the previous administration of President Donald Trump and its lack of cooperation with the incoming administration of President Joe Biden severely constrained U.S. options in Afghanistan.
France's president presses China to help end the war in Ukraine.
Xi, however, gave France's President Emmanuel Macron no assurances that he would use his close diplomatic relationship with Russia's President Vladimir Putin as leverage to push for peace.
And Mozambique legalizes local militias under the military to help fight Islamist militants. We'll have these stories and more next on International Edition. Stay tuned. A highly classified U.S. government review has been sent to lawmakers examining the chaotic withdrawal of American forces from Afghanistan as the Taliban overran Kabul in 2021. According to a 12-page unclassified summary released by the White House on Thursday, there were no indications that, quote, more time, more funds, or more Americans, unquote, could have fundamentally changed the trajectory. VOA's chief national correspondent Steve Herman in Washington has details.
Decisions by the previous administration of President Donald Trump and its lack of cooperation with the incoming administration of President Joe Biden severely constrained U.S. options in Afghanistan, according to a summarized report publicly issued. National Security Council spokesman John Kirby says the Trump administration did not hand over any files on the planned Afghanistan withdrawal to incoming Biden officials, despite numerous requests.
Transitions matter. That's the first lesson learned here. And the incoming administration wasn't afforded much of one.
The report effectively pushes back against relentless Republican criticism of the Biden administration's handling of the withdrawal, the focus of an investigation in the Republican-led House of Representatives. Steve Herman, VOA News, Washington.
China's leader has called for peace talks over Ukraine after France's president urged him to, quote, bring Russia to its senses, unquote. Associated Press correspondent Karine Chamas reports.
At a joint news briefing in Beijing, China's Xi Jinping said, resume peace talks as soon as possible, in accordance with the purposes and principles of the UN Charter, take into account the legitimate security concerns of all parties. Xi, however, gave France's President Emmanuel Macron no assurances that he would use his close diplomatic relationship with Russia's President Vladimir Putin as leverage to push for peace. Beijing sees Moscow as a strategic partner in the face of U.S. domination in global affairs. Whilst China's government has tried to remain neutral, it has given Putin diplomatic support and has repeated Russian justifications for the February 2022 attack. I'm Karen Chamas.
A day after celebrating Finland joining the Transatlantic Security Alliance, NATO members got down to work tackling security threats posed by both Russia and China. VOA senior diplomatic correspondent Cindy Sen reports from Brussels.
After rejoicing over Finland becoming NATO's 31st member, alliance foreign ministers faced the harsh reality of the ongoing Russian invasion of Ukraine and planned how to equip Ukraine for an expected spring counteroffensive against invading Russian forces. Finland took its place at the table as part of the NATO family. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said the addition of Finland will have a major impact.
Finland also makes the alliance as a whole stronger, and that's important in and of itself. I think it may have some additional benefits in the sense that to the extent Russia thinks about expanding or broadening its aggression, the deterrent that NATO poses to that has now become even stronger.
Blinken had this message for Russian President Vladimir Putin.
I'm tempted to say this is maybe the one thing we can thank Mr. Putin for, because he once again here has precipitated something he claims to want to prevent.
Russia had said it would respond to Finland joining NATO by increasing its military presence if necessary. The Brussels meeting came as NATO tanks and fighting vehicles are showing up on the battlefield in Ukraine. Ukraine's defense minister shared a video last week showing him taking a test ride on a British-supplied Challenger 2 battle tank. One expert told VOA the world is watching to see how Ukraine's expected spring counteroffensive will play out. Michael Kimmage is a professor of history at the Catholic University of America. He spoke to VOA via Zoom.
So whether it's the United States, whether it's Russia, whether it's Ukraine, whether it's China, whether it's Europe, whether it's the world's democracies and non-democracies, I think everybody's holding their breath at the moment. And there's just not much that's going to happen diplomatically until we see how far this counteroffensive goes.
The battle for Bakhmut continues to rage in Ukraine, and most of the city's 70,000 people have fled. Another analyst told VOA that Bakhmut is still the focus for Kyiv. Luke Coffey is a senior fellow at the Hudson Institute. He spoke to VOA via Skype.
The Ukrainians are really focused on stabilizing the situation around Bakhmut, while at the same time tying down as many Russian forces there as possible, while also at the same time ramping up the training and the equipment of the Abrams, of the Challengers, of the Strikers, of the Bradleys, of the Leopards. So when the conditions are right, when the battlefield has been prepped, as they like to say, and as the mud starts to dry up, then I think we'll see the Ukrainians make some big moves on the battlefield.
Blinken and the other NATO leaders said that Russia had failed to demoralize Ukrainians or the alliance that is supporting them during the winter, as Putin had planned. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Brussels.
U.S. House Speaker Kevin McCarthy and Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen underscored cooperative ties between their governments at a meeting in California. The meeting came amid Chinese threats of retaliation, as both the United States and Taiwan are facing rising tensions with China. Michael Sullivan reports.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy led more than a dozen members of Congress to the Ronald Reagan Presidential Library in California, which honors the 40th president, for a meeting with Taiwan President Tsai Ing-wen. At the gathering, McCarthy promised to work with Taiwan for economic freedom, democracy, stability, and peace in Asia.
Today was a bipartisan meeting. Republicans and Democrats united together in a place that symbolizes the freedom and the commitment and the bond that's only become stronger with the president with us today.
Supporters of Taiwan had crowded inside the lobby of Tsai's hotel, and supporters of mainland China gathered outside. The visit was unofficial, described as a transit stop after the Taiwan leader's visit to Central America. China analyst Patricia Kim of the Brookings Institution says the trip is a response to increased Chinese aggression on many fronts.
Not just the military domain, but also the economic and diplomatic domains, there has been greater pressure and desire on the part of U.S. leaders to do more to counter China's aggression in the Taiwan Strait and to increase support for Taiwan.
Tsai was heartened by the meeting.
Their presence and unwavering support reassure the people of Taiwan that we are not isolated.
Chinese officials call Tsai's visit a provocative act. China criticized last year's visit to Taiwan by Nancy Pelosi, the former Democratic Speaker of the House. In apparent response, China conducted military drills off Taiwan's coast. Again, Patricia Kim.
It seems that expectations are that Beijing's response this time around may not be as extreme as last summer, when it engaged in unprecedented live fire drills around the island after Speaker Pelosi's visit. So it remains to be seen how extreme its reaction will be this time. And I think it could depend in part on how the California meeting is portrayed in the media.
Kim says Beijing may also moderate its response because European Commission President Ursula von der Leyen, French President Emmanuel Macron, and former Taiwan President Ma Ying-jeou are all now visiting China, which seeks to present itself as a moderating force. While McCarthy and other U.S. lawmakers are reassuring Taiwan that it has friends in Washington. Mike O'Sullivan, VOA News, Los Angeles.
Fiji's prime minister has raised concerns about allegations of Chinese espionage. Sitiveni Rambuka is investigating claims that the Chinese government spied on a senior Pacific leader while he was visiting Fiji. From Sydney, Phil Mercer reports.
Sitiveni Rabuka became Fiji's prime minister for the third time last December. He led two military coups in the South Pacific nation in 1987 and led the country in the 1990s. His government is investigating allegations from the outgoing president of the Federated States of Micronesia, David Panuelo, that Chinese agents followed him during a recent trip to Fiji. Panuelo has been a vocal critic of Beijing. Last month, he wrote to Micronesia's legislature, accusing China of spying, bribing local politicians, and attempting to subvert the nation's sovereignty. Speaking to the Australian Broadcasting Corporation's The Pacific programme, Rabuka stressed the allegations of espionage in Fiji were not yet proven, but they were being taken seriously.
For someone to feel threatened by another power while in the dominion of Fiji is almost a slap in the face, so we need to be sure that that actually happened, and if it did happen, how do we address it?
There has been no response so far to the allegations from China. It has had bilateral security and policing agreements with Fiji for more than a decade. But Rabuka has continued his predecessor's gradual diplomatic shift away from Beijing. Earlier this year, he cancelled a key law enforcement accord with China because of differences between the two countries' legal systems. Rabuka told Australian media that Beijing should continue to be a development partner in Fiji. In 2022, China signed a security accord with Solomon Islands, a strategically located, mostly Melanesian chain of islands northeast of Australia. China failed to persuade other nations to join a broader regional accord, but Australia and its allies are concerned about Beijing's military and diplomatic ambitions in the South Pacific. Australia has intensified its efforts in the region in the past year, since the election of a centre-left government in Canberra. Australian Foreign Affairs Minister Penny Wong conceded that Pacific leaders had been ignored and disrespected by Australia in the past. Echoing the concerns of Pacific leaders, Wong said that climate change was an existential threat to the island nations. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
In other news, the Israeli military says it has struck targets in the Gaza Strip following a day of rocket fire from the Palestinian territory and from Lebanon. A pair of explosions were heard in Gaza late Thursday. It was not immediately clear what was being targeted. The airstrikes come as Israel's security cabinet was meeting to discuss a response to the rocket fire. Tensions have been rising in recent days following unrest at Jerusalem's most sensitive holy site when police stormed the Al-Aqsa Mosque and beat Palestinians who had barricaded themselves inside. The violence in Jerusalem has led to repeated rocket fire from Gaza. On Thursday, militants in Lebanon fired over 30 rockets into Israel as well. This is VOA's International Edition. I am Gene Duofo in Washington. Mozambique has legalized the creation of local militias under the military to help fight Islamist militants in the northern Cabo Delgado province. Charles Manguiro reports from Maputo, Mozambique.
The decree legalizing the involvement of local militias in the fight against Islamist militants in the northern province of Cabo Delgado was approved and announced Wednesday after a cabinet meeting in Maputo late that day. The government had secured parliamentary approval for the move in November after the defense ministry admitted the Mozambican army could not deal with militias alone. The self-defense local militias already helped the Mozambican armed forces and military contingents from Rwanda and some Southern African Development Community countries in the fight in oil-rich Cabo Delgado. Cabinet spokesman Filimao Swazi says the local militia force will be formalized to strengthen the role of the defense and security forces in countering and containing the spread of militant Islamist incursions, protecting community settlements and public and private infrastructures. He added that the decree will allow for better structuring, organization, and logistical support for local self-defense militias. Swazi says the decree establishes the local force and the respective statute. He says the decree defines the concept of the local force, its activation and deactivation, composition, forms of acquisition and its rights and duties. The force is mostly composed of ex-combatants and civilians who, since 2020, have supported the fight in Cabo Delgado. In 5 years, the conflict in Cabo Delgado has already displaced more than 1 million people, according to the United Nations High Commissioner for Refugees, and caused close to 5,000 deaths, according to the Armed Conflict Location and Event Data Project, which specializes in disaggregated conflict data collection, analysis, and crisis mapping. Mozambique has been fighting militants linked to the Islamic State group in Cabo Delgado since 2017. Charles Mangwiro for VOA News, Maputo, Mozambique.
Thank you, Charles. As much as $250 billion in debt should be forgiven to help developing countries at greater risk of default get a path towards fiscal solvency. That's according to a new report released today by the Boston University Global Development Policy Center and a debt relief for a green and inclusive recovery project. Project co-chair Kevin Gallagher heads the university's Global Development Center. He tells VOA's Carol Van Dam that 61 nations, including many African nations, need, quote, haircuts, unquote, on debt owed to creditors in order to emerge from COVID-19 and meet climate and development goals.
The price tag of these investments is small relative to the cost of inaction. But at this moment, many developing countries at an increasing rate just don't even have a fighting chance to be able to mobilize that kind of finance. And so we call for a reform. The G20, to its credit, in the middle of COVID, created a mechanism for countries to work out its debt. But it's been plagued by a number of things. Our proposal, number one, proposes a way to get out of that, and two, to link debt relief efforts to the necessity of mobilizing finance for climate change and development.
What is the mechanism to work out the reduction of debt?
The G20 created something called the Common Framework, and it's only eligible for 70 of the poorest countries. So many African countries are eligible for it, but not all countries that are in debt distress. And if a country's in debt distress, thinks it may default, and needs to restructure its loans, it can go to the G20 Common Framework and say so, and ask to be part of the program. The International Monetary Fund will do an analysis to figure out what level of debt reduction is needed to get you back on your feet and to get your international creditors as much money back as they can. There's been a couple problems with that. One of them is that it's not eligible for all the countries in debt distress. So Sri Lanka and Suriname right now are in significant debt distress and default. They can't be part of the program because they're not poor enough. Number two, today's world of international credit is much different than it was in the 1990s when most countries only borrowed from the World Bank, the African Development Bank, and so forth. Now it's the World Bank and the African Development Bank. It's the China Development Bank, the Export-Import Bank of China, and the biggest is bondholders or capital market and Eurobonds administered by Vanguard, Standard Charter, PIMCO, and so forth. And so a country like, say, Zambia or Ghana is not just negotiating with the World Bank and a New York-led commercial bank. Now a country like Ghana has to be trying to coordinate across all these different creditor classes from different countries, from different incentives, and it's much more difficult.
That's Kevin Gallagher, co-chair of the Green and Inclusive Recovery Project and director of the Boston University Global Development Center. He was speaking with my colleague, Carol Van Dam from Boston, Massachusetts.
This is Science in a Minute.
A pair of U.S. scientists have detected repeating radio bursts originating from YZ SETI, a star located about 12 light years from Earth. The detection has led Sebastian Panetta from the University of Colorado Boulder and Jackie Villardson of Bucknell University to find that a rocky Earth-sized exoplanet orbiting close to the radio-transmitting star may have a magnetic field like the one that surrounds and protects our planet. Radio bursts are still mysterious, but some researchers theorize that they are produced by magnetic field interactions between a star and its planets. The researchers used the Carl G. Jansky Very Large Array, a radio telescope operated by the U.S. National Science Foundation's National Radio Astronomy Observatory, to make their findings. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel. Former President Donald Trump is the first former U.S. president ever to face criminal charges. After his indictment last week, he was arraigned on Tuesday. How will this affect Donald Trump's aspirations to be the Republican nominee in the 2024 presidential race? What impact will this case, along with several other investigations, have on the U.S. political landscape? Implications of Trump's indictment, next on Encounter on The Voice of America.
U.S. Vice President Kamala Harris' recent trip to Africa marked her first trip to the continent as the highest-ranking Biden administration official. This week on Our Voices, we'll take a look at the impact of the trip on the average citizen across the continent, especially women and young girls. Join the conversation Wednesdays at 1900 UTC on The Voice of America.
This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. On behalf of the entire production team, thank you so much for listening. Visit our website for in-depth coverage of world events and news 24 hours at voanews.com. And check out voaafrica.com for more English language programming. You can find International Edition and our current affairs programs, Encounter, Press Conference USA, and Issues in the News on voanews.com. Until next time, I'm Chinedu from Washington. Have a wonderful weekend.
An international public service announcement by the United States government.
The U.S. Department of State's Rewards for Justice program, which is administered by the Diplomatic Security Service, is offering a reward of up to $5 million for information leading to the arrest or conviction in any country of any individual who committed, attempted, or conspired to commit, or aided or abetted in the commission of the murder of Shaquille Khan. Khan, a lawful permanent resident of the United States, was murdered execution style outside of the restaurant he owned in Johnson City, New York, on the evening of March 30, 2019. Khan was shot by a lone gunman as he was closing his business for the night. Khan, a native of the Swat region in Pakistan, was openly involved in political activities opposing terrorist organizations in that country. The U.S. Attorney's Office for the Northern District of New York and the FBI's Joint Terrorism Task Force are investigating the murder of Shaquille Khan. In November 2020, the FBI issued a reward of up to $50,000 for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the person or persons responsible for the murder. The reward offer from Rewards for Justice is in addition to the FBI's reward offer and seeks information that would assist the FBI in identifying those responsible for Khan's murder. More information about this reward offer is located on the Rewards for Justice website at www.rewardsforjustice.net. Since its inception in 1984, Rewards for Justice has paid out in excess of $250 million to more than 125 people across the globe who provided actionable information that helped resolve threats to U.S. national security. You can follow Rewards for Justice on Twitter at https://twitter.com/RFJ_USA. Anyone with information on those responsible for the murder of Shakil Khan should contact Rewards for Justice via Signal, Telegram, or WhatsApp at +1 202 702 7843. All information will be kept strictly confidential.
That was an international public service announcement by the United States government.